Hi, and welcome to my podcast series, The New Abnormal. I'm Sean P. Lodishenesi, researcher, author, and speaker from Brand Positive. As a researcher, I've spent 20 years conducting ethnographic interviews on global projects. Along the way, I've been lucky enough to have met some amazing people, from psychologists to activists to creatives, some of whom I'll be talking to in this series. I'm also the author of The Post-Truth Business, which focused on trust, empathy, and privacy, while my second book, Influencers and Revolutionaries, looked into innovation, behavioural change, and the climate crisis. So, I hope you enjoy the interviews, and if so, please tell your friends, leave a rating, and watch out for our other episodes. Now, without further delay, let's crack on with today's podcast. So today I'm really pleased to be talking with Livia Fioretti, who's the head of the Insights Academy at Trend Watching and the LATAM Lead Trend Analyst. As head of Academy, she's responsible for leading a global team regarding Trend Watch's webinars, workshops and courses to clients across a whole range of industries about the latest trends and innovation. She's also responsible for the company's Latin American content, helping clients and trend enthusiasts from around the globe understand different perspectives of the region. Prior to doing that, she was the head of the Global Insight Network at Trend Watching. That's the network across 65 countries that helps them understand what's happening across regions as well as different cultures. And then back in the day, she was at Ogilvy Brazil. Hi, Livia, and how are you?
Hello, Sean. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm doing okay, I guess.
Good. Now, I know that when we spoke previously, you spoke about a really interesting course that you were doing that unfortunately was cut short during due to COVID. But perhaps talk us through that, first of all, just what you were doing at Goldsmiths, and then we'll go through how you got to where you are today. But yeah, go on then, Goldsmiths, because that cultural anthropology course you're doing sounded really, really interesting.
Oh, yes, that was an amazing experience. Working with trends, and especially considering Trend Watching's framework, most of the research that we do is based on business exclusively. So what we do is that we scan innovations to try to make sense of change. And I really missed that human element to it. So even though we do use anthropology and sociology as base, I thought that it would be amazing to bring that into my curriculum. So it was, a course that was really cut short, but I had the opportunity to really understand the basics of anthropology and from different cultures, how we can still see elements of it shaping culture today. So, yeah, that was really, really fun.
Fantastic. And then COVID got in the way. By the way, as mentioned, so Ogilvy Brazil. So perhaps in terms of, if we say, the windy road, or perhaps a very straight path to where you are today, because it's so interesting what you're getting up to at Trend Watching. Perhaps just talk us through. So how you got into Ogilvy Brazil, and then how and where you went before you got to being head of the academy.
Well, that's quite a fun story. So my background, my bachelor actually is social communication and advertising. And I joined the team at Ogilvy as an intern back in 2013, I guess it was. And I had the opportunity to stay as a junior strategic planner for about 3 years, I would say. And even though I really had a crush on advertising, the part of the process that really caught my attention was the trend research. And I remember that, we would receive some trend reports from Trend Watching and other players. And when I would have the opportunity to use that thought, to use that knowledge during the process of creating concepts and all the research, I was so impressed by that I was like, oh my gosh, who writes this? What do I need to do to write these trends? And then from there, I was so into this that I decided to move to do a course, a master's degree in trend research. So I moved to Spain from São Paulo to Barcelona, where I'm currently based, to study trend research. And it was an amazing experience because for you to have an idea, my first project was something that was completely out of the box because I had to research trends in Cuba for this Swedish NGO. And that was I think the hardest job that I ever have to do, because I had to research trends in a country that I've never been to, that I didn't know anyone from there, that the internet connection was an issue, the information wasn't an issue. So it was just like crazy. And that really opened my mind and brought me different perspectives of the importance of trend research and of cultural research. And that's why I realized then that I needed to do extra courses and read different things, which made me end up doing the Goldsmith course. Mm-hmm. But after the master degrees, I decided to stay in Spain for a while. I had the opportunity to work with a local Catalan consultancy company. And even though I joined that company for their communication, so I was responsible for their social media and communication and the strategy, the positioning, basically a mix of strategic planner with social media. During a summer, we had this client that was a hospital, and I realized in the proposal that there was an opportunity for a trend report. And I remember to tell my bosses, like, hey, I think we can develop a trend report for this client. And they were really, they trusted me a lot on that one. And it was an amazing opportunity. And they gave me 1 month. So during August, I was the only person at the office trying to do the report, doing the desk research, talking to people to understand the future of the Catalan health sector. And we developed the report, we shared it with the client, they loved it. And that from there on, I started to do the trend research for this company. And from there, I got the offer to move to London to work at Trend Watching, doing their Latin America research and doing general research as well. So it was really from communication to trends, always doing trends on the side, always writing a lot of articles for some magazines, doing some crazy projects here and there. But then I managed to actually move my career from advertising to trend research.
Nice, very nice indeed. I remember when Trend Watching first set up, and obviously now the organization is an absolute sort of a behemoth, should we say, absolutely superb. So very, very interesting. So tell me about, I know you've got something coming out fairly soon. You can't go into perhaps too much detail from the point of view of all of those sort of vast amounts of paying clients, but perhaps just give us a bit of an overview of it. So the LATAM report that you have coming up, to know this issue about the sort of things like the sort of the different realities and the regionality issues there are going to be absolutely fascinating.
Oh, yes. This is a really important report, and I'm really proud of the team that we worked on it together. So recently, this year at Trend Watching, we published an update version of our mega trend framework. So all these slow movements that we've been seeing for a while that, COVID managed to impact it all. So yep. We took the time last year to really review our megatrend framework and to make sense, to be sure that they make sense for this so-called new normal. And the thing with, the global trends is that, I'm sure you know this more than anyone, is that trends, they play differently across different regions.
Sure.
So what we understood is that we could not have like one global framework that we could fit all the different countries and the different realities in those squares. So we just launched the APAC version of the mega trends, the localized, in which we really understood how these global trends were playing out in the Asia Pacific region, in which my colleague Akisha Lee Roy worked on. And I'm not sure if I can tell that. Oh, I can just say a colleague. Is that okay?
Okay, cool. Yeah, fine. I'll just
perfect.
Take that out.
Yep. Just, yeah. No two.
Sure. Okay.
In which a colleague worked on. And for the Latin America version, we worked with our network of spotters, which is TWIN. So this process is a bit differently because it's a collaborative report in which we select from our spotters network, our trend research network, 10 people from different countries. So from Mexico to Bolivia, we make a selection of the people who are interested on helping us with it. Mm-hmm. And that from there on, we have weekly calls to really see from their perspective in their countries, how those mega trends are playing out.
Yeah.
So it's amazing because it's quite a long process. It takes like up to 4 months. And we are just finishing writing the theory because this is not a traditional trend report in which we can throw some stats or mention some events that really help shape that trend. But talking about mega trends, we really need to have this open perspective and more timeless, which is quite hard working with trends.
So
I'm super excited to hopefully release the report soon for our premium clients. But I'm sure that we'll be able to share some information on different touch points as well.
Okay. So just in terms of going back slightly to the whole issue of megatrends, and in terms of things that you can talk about openly. So let's say if we're going back a couple of months and when Trendwatch were putting out trend reports for 2022, etc., what sort of things that are in the public domain were you looking at that you consider to be like the overarching trends that one can talk about to a whole range of clients across different sectors, etc.?
We just had a webinar in which we covered five of those trends. So that's available on YouTube. I totally recommend the video. What I would say is that the interesting about publishing the mega trends and the trends that we have with them is that I think they really get to speak to, well, the it's quite complicated to say that in such an unstable environment such as the one that we are right now. But it's interesting because I feel like we really get to see how consumers evolved. So, for example, there's this one mega trend which I really like that's called Age of Healing. And it's about consumers seeking this new route to enlightenment and the new perspective that we have, for example, on wellness.
Yep.
So it's really this relentless pursuit of self-improvement, giving way to real self-transformation that was somehow catalyzed by how the pandemic acted on our perspective of personal growth. So, for example, it's amazing to see how, well, from really talking mental health in, well, a global scene to, for example, in Asia Pacific, how the Tangpeng movement in China or movements in South Korea for people to really rethink their take on and really what takes them to see success and growth, with really well-known cases of overworking and burnout, to Latin America, that really being also a way to, for people that during the pandemic, they really start to understand this bigger perspective of well-being that goes even beyond one's body. So it's not only about how you look or how you feel, but also about your financial situation and the stability that you have, and how in that country consumers are also turning, because as they don't have yet to have much support from governments and, well, established institutions, how they're really turning into community and into kinds of alternative solutions to really find that well-being. So I do find this movement really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And on that exact point about countries where, as you're saying, where there isn't much, or in fact, in many cases, virtually any government support, and so people are essentially having to group together, help each other, help the community. Are you seeing that sort of activity playing out more in certain countries than others?
Not so much. It's hard to talk about countries in general. I do see that more in some communities.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the thing, talking about regional trends, it's that it's not only about the country itself, but also about the particularities of each. So definitely we do see that in communities that that are somehow overlooked, and even like interesting enough, also it's not something about well-being have like lower or higher income, but also about the support network that one has. Because, for example, in big cities, you don't get to have as much support as you would in a smaller place or in which a community that, it's closer. So that depends a lot. I don't see that much in countries, more on really this post-demographic approach of the trends.
Okay. And then what about on the sort of on the brand side of things, or sort of organizations? Are any of them stepping up and playing a really useful role with these communities?
Oh, definitely. It's hard to name brands at this stage, but what we've seen is that consumers are increasingly expecting brands from different industries to step up. So that's the thing. You can, as a brand, you can no longer just be like passive and not do. You really need to make a statement. And I guess this is one of the biggest expectations of this new decade. It's on how really consumers are turning from governments to brands to really expect them to for help. So I do see that also thinking now with the metaverse and new touch points growing, how that's actually another story, but definitely we will need to see brands stepping up more and really being, because you can only expect an NGO to help, especially that now most of the, like some brands have more power than entire government. So it will be an interesting thing to keep an eye on.
And then, as you just mentioned there, this, from the point of view of the metaverse, I mean, there's been so much written recently about this, positive and negative. So what is the, what's the view like from trend watching from the point of view of the metaverse, and how brands are utilizing this?
Well, I think there are brands that, there are different, there are so many ways to play on it. And it's hard to talk about the metaverse considering that no one yet knows exactly what it will look like. But I do think this element of really the worlds, the online and the offline ones are colliding. This is really helping shape our identity in one sense. So it's really interesting to see this brands playing different fields to really help assist on that, because we've been seeing this crash of identities playing out for years now. And I do think that the metaverse will be kind of like the, kind of the final step the real fine conceptualization of what identities are. And I think it's important to say that these new identities and these new spaces won't be branded, or hopefully they won't be branded, but still that opens a lot of opportunities for brands to provide through assistance. And I guess the way they do it, it won't be so much about the medium, but really how they communicate and what they intend with it will be the true game changer.
How interesting. And anyone, I know you mentioned that it's still such early days on this, but are you seeing any brands at the moment actually doing something that is genuinely exciting and impactful in that area?
Let me think. It depends a lot. So we have we had McDonald's collaborating to reimagine the Lunar New Year traditions in the metaverse. We have a lot of we have Snap's shopping lens, which allowed users to try and buy products while swiping. I think there was this interesting example from Rocket, which is a US-based cryptocurrency final service, I'd say, announcing their plans to install a series of cryptocurrencies ATM in Colombia. So was also something that I found quite interesting. Yes. What else? Well, there was this one innovation that we shared on Innovation of the Day not that long ago, of energy company Dalkia adding a delete by date to their social media posts. Because the thing is that we keep having this mindset of creating more and more content, but actually when it's just done, it still creates some kind of like carbon footprint. So now their social media posts will have this delete by dates so that they can still create content, but being more mindful of their carbon footprint. And I think that's really interesting. And actually that ties back to another megatrend that we published recently. That's called For You, and it's really about how curation helps empowers consumers' uniqueness. It's really this new perspective on how to deal with intoxication, and not only intoxication from the consumer perspective, but as I just mentioned, there is also an environmental footprint on that we need to be mindful of. Yeah. So it's nice to see that it's not only about that the metaverse and, well, society today is not only about really creating things, but really about curating them.
Yeah. How interesting. Just going back slightly and focusing back again on LATAM from a completely macro level, or say from a macro perspective, when you are looking at the region, perhaps just talk us through a couple of the locations that you find particularly interesting in terms of what's going on culturally or socially from a really, really dynamic trend viewpoint, be it, you know, on any sort of social or cultural level or whatever. So when you're looking at it, if you were to pick out, let's say, sort of either three cities or indeed three countries where you think, wow, this is really, really exciting, this is where it's all going.
That's a really tough question.
Perhaps do 30 rather than three, but go on then. So yeah, a few that really, really excite you.
Well, not being partial at all as Brazilian, I do have to say Brazil. I think there are amazing cultural movements happening in the country.
Yep.
And I feel really proud of it, if I can be honest. So I would say definitely, not only because of, well, the size and the economical and cultural importance of Brazil, that's always my first place to look at. Due to like the whole innovation scene. So culturally, from music to film, to really the publication and the statements that we see, even the way that people, well, the fashion, I think, is amazing in the country, just to name a few. Also, I do believe Mexico is super strong. And I like that Mexico is really on the bridge between different different cultures. And also one of the main trends that I would say that is a mega trend in the region, that is decolonization, is super strong on Mexico. So I do see them leading the way when it comes to true decolonization, that will definitely inspire other countries. Yep. I do see a lot of really exciting social changes happening in Chile. So the way people are, well, really society is really structured, it has been structuring itself on the past years since, well, the whole constitution. And now, well, I think is amazing what we're seeing there. Colombia also super excited. I think you can see innovations and brands from Colombia being so creative that it's really nice. Also, due to this Spotters network that we have, Twin, we do have many people in Ecuador and Bolivia really bringing new perspectives and things that when you look through the culture, through the nation's lenses, the country's lenses, you do see how innovative they are. In Bolivia, there's also a really sparkling innovation scene bubbling. So also an amazing place to keep an eye on.
It's interesting how much you talk about innovation across those countries. But for instance, when you're talking about the creative brands coming out of Colombia or the activity in Bolivia. And then what about some of the other countries? I mean, at random, and one is looking at the Guatemalas and Nicaraguas, or further down, obviously, Argentina and Uruguay. Anything going on there that is also exciting and dynamic?
Oh, true. In Guatemala, for example, we do have one spotter that's always sharing innovations. And it's really interesting to see how we started working this project 4 years ago. You start to see more people communicating their innovation. And this is also quite of a trick that in different countries in which sometimes it's hard for trend researchers to find innovation due to, I don't know, even the access. Sometimes it's really important to, research in local languages, but also even though if you're researching in Spanish or in Portuguese as well, the two main languages of the region, sometimes even there is hard to find innovation spots that are local. So we are seeing more things coming from Guatemala as well, which is amazing. And Argentina and Uruguay, they're always, you can always find really stuff, fun stuff in there, especially when it comes to communication. So really innovative ways to communicate, and that's, I think that's also places to keep an eye on.
Okay. And looking at this from a sort of perhaps a different perspective in terms of sort of national branding initiatives, I mean, you know, all countries want to tell a good story about themselves. They want to talk about the narratives around, you know, myths and history and realities and physicality, etc. I mean, do you ever get asked to input on research that actually takes a look at public perceptions of those countries and what they can be doing to fine-tune their images?
I never had the opportunity to work on a project like this one, but I think it's important even more at the end of the day, countries are brands in one sense. They're trying to tell a story, they're trying to communicate something, and you can totally see that from like ads on TV portraying like this kind of idyllic lifestyles. But I do think that now more than ever, these narratives are becoming more and more complex. So it's definitely something that we need to, that I wish I could have an opportunity to work on a project like this one.
As the old saying goes, when we express a preference for French holidays or German cars or Italian opera, we're responding to brands in the same ways when we're shopping for clothing or food. And it's just interesting to me, sitting back from this, how I think a lot of the countries you're mentioning, the all the positive things you're talking about, how dynamic and exciting and forward-looking they are, often just don't come across, certainly from the point of view, I think, of a Northern European or Western European media. You know, it's amazing that really, really dynamic, great things that could be said often are lost somewhere in the ether, as it were. Okay, so just in terms of when you're looking at the, I mean, obviously you're looking at a huge number of brands, an enormous amount of trend activity on a social and cultural level, on a product and service and experience level. So, I mean, do you have any particular brands or organizations that are your sort of your favorite go-to ones that you mention? You say, you know what, when we're talking about what brands can do that it's really exciting and dynamic, or what they should be doing, here's some examples.
Oh, that's quite complicated, because we at Trend Watching, we try to keep an eye on 16 different industries, and considering the well, the particularities of the regions and so. But we always keep an eye on big brands. So that's, I think that's the go-to place, is to see what, for example, PlayStation, Volkswagen, MasterCard are doing. But I think that's not the secret. It's super important to, well, to take a look at those. But the local tiny ones get to say a bit more about, well, cultures. And really, I think they also have like this, they have more powerful and more flexibility to tell the story of the target that they're targeting. So I do, I know that it's not exactly the answer that you probably expected, but if I don't follow like specific brands, but I guess like the tiny local ones that we get to find. We do have this big spreadsheet that's called the Collective Brain, in which we have over 2,000 different websites talking about innovation. So from brands to podcasts to newsletters, and they're really regional. So we created our, I created my research stream based on that. It is a publicly available if, well, you're interested or anyone's interested. But I think that's, for me, the biggest secret to really spot innovations is to go to these small places, to these small brands, and really trying to understand what they mean at a local level.
Okay. And on that, just get back to that point you mentioned there about the collective brain. Perhaps you just talk about a bit more of that in detail, about exactly how it works, what it is, and how you use it.
Of course. So the Collective Brain was a project launched last summer with TWIN, which is Trend Watching's Insight Network that I already mentioned. And the thing is that we have not over 900 trend researchers in 65 different countries. And what we asked them was to share their favorite sources. So we had I don't know, designers from Japan sharing their favorite resources, businessmen from Nigeria. We had chefs from, we do have chefs on the platform from Guatemala, for example. And we really managed to create this amazing, well, it's a really pretty Google sheet in which you can filter through industry, through country, through region, all their go-to sources.
Wow, so, how interesting.
Yes, it's amazing. And what we've done is that we've created a research stream based on that. So it's this newsreader in which we have all those websites. So we see what, well, we try to keep up with what they're published, and to, that's a way to be informed of what's happening in all those 16 different industries that I already mentioned across the different regions.
How interesting. Wow. And then is there not a danger there of being swamped with information to such an extent that you lose sight of what you're actually looking for? Or does it work actually the other way around? It actually helps you to cut through all that?
No, it's definitely really, really overwhelming. But at the same time, I do think that once you start looking, and I don't know, you try to take a look at it like once or twice a week, you start to see some patterns. And I'm not saying that you get to think trends specifically from there, because of course there's a lot of noise, but it definitely helps to, for example, if I need to see what's going on in a specific country, in a specific industry, I do have a website to research. So I use that more in the sense of like, to start my research, do you know the white page, that fear that is kind of paralyzing, like, oh my gosh, where do I start this research? So that's my go-to place, because at least I know that there's a reliable source, because we also kind of checked all of them just to make sure that we were not putting any kind of like fake news website or anything.
Yeah, sure.
So it's quite good to at least have a reliable website, and that from there we start moving to another and to another and to another until we find what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. So go on then. I mean, on that exact point you're saying, when you asked all the people in the network to mention their favorite sources, has to ask the killer question, what did you mention?
So I mentioned, for example, this newsletter that talks about, it's a weekly update of everything that happens in Latin America called Giro Latino. I also mentioned my favorite newsletters, which is the Nexialist from Rodrigo Turra, who is a Brazilian-based designer, which is amazing. Love his newsletter. Thomas Klefke's newsletter. I think I mentioned this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. Delighted to hear.
So also the Deep Dive podcast. I didn't mention specific websites, but more other sources of general knowledge. I think that was a better approach to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. So, by the way, it's fascinating you're talking about the sort of the pattern recognition side of things from the point of view of picking up on what different the sources are talking about and listening to and looking at around the world. One always has to go back to the mighty William Gibson when we talk about pattern recognition. I remember interviewing many years ago when he wrote the book of the same name, and what a amazing character he is. But what about, as we are now looking forward, so what have you, I know you've got this the huge report coming up and it's going to be published very, very soon. What about you after that then? Does that then take you through certainly sort of the next few months of presenting that and talking about it sort of in various parts of the world, or are you then moving on to something else or what?
Oh, wow. So yes, a bit of presenting, even though I have presented more global trends, the Latin America trends. We are launching an update of our academy, which is Trendwatching's online course in which we teach our methodology for trend research. So we're updating. I had just been in Amsterdam a couple of weeks ago shooting that. So we're having the new updates, and hopefully, if I have time, I'll get to start working on new courses. So, but that's not something for the short term, that's more in the medium term. But I'm really excited to see the course update goes live, having more people interested in purpose-driven innovation. And on the side, I'm also giving some classes in different universities. And that's really exciting, because it's amazing to get to see the students and learn from the new generation of researchers. I find that really refreshing.
Mm. And from the point of view of when you're talking with those students, or indeed talking with brands, I mean, you know, everyone has their own perhaps sort of, personal favorite brand that speaks to them, you know, individually, it speaks to them emotionally. Is there a particular brand that you really feel close to, either on a sort on a meta level or indeed on a micro level? Is there something you think, you know what, this one, you know, I could talk about forever?
Well, I get super excited to see what Natura, which is this personal care brand, which is super, they're big activists, what they think and what they do. Patagonia, I guess, always great innovations coming from there. It depends, because I think I might have like a brand crush in different industries, but right now it's hard to think of one specific.
Okay. So in terms of key takeaway points then, key takeaways of the report that's coming up and why people should be looking at, as I'm sure they'll all be super excited about it. And then also is talk about your views on the ethos I run through this podcast of hope, community and resilience. But the first one, the LATAM report that you've got coming up.
So I think my key takeaway is for really people to look beyond Europe and North America when it comes to innovations, and really try to understand culture and try to see the opportunities that lies in, well, the global south more specifically. I also do think is amazing, and for me it's always a big learning to work with people from different industries, from different countries. I think that also helps a lot to diminish a bit the bias that we have, and which might be quite problematic. As a trend researcher, I do think we need to try to work with communities and with people from different industries, different regions, to really try to make sense that of the content that we publish is actually real in different environments. So I think like content and process wise, that would be my main takeaway. And regarding Datos, I do think we need hope, community and resilience now more than ever. So I think I could say that's one of this decade's great. If we get to work with them, it would be like this new decade's biggest learning.
Absolutely. I'm into that, as we say. Okay, well, look, Livia, it's been absolutely fantastic talking with you. Just so everyone, by the way, are aware of where they can track you down.
I'm on LinkedIn, Livia Fioretti. I also can be found on Twitter. That's the social medias in which I'm mostly active on. And also a bit on Instagram, but not so much.
Okay, well, in that case, we'll encourage everyone to do precisely that. Well, look, it's been absolutely great talking with you, Livia. I know that you are incredibly busy and need to get on to your next thing. So all I can say is to Livia Fioretti, the head of Insights Academy and LATAM, the trend analyst at the amazing Trend Watching, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me. This was amazing.
Thanks for listening to the New Abnormal podcast. Just so you know, the trends and insights discussed in these podcasts link to my speeches. Check out seanpeterc.com for more info, and to ongoing cultural and social research conducted by brandpositive.org. Till next time, goodbye.